What was the motivation behind Good German? What was it that was
now you've ruined it. We optioned the book, hired Paul to write it, and then Stephen and Paul worked on the screenplay for a long period of time, and the whole time he was doing it, he was collecting the stock footage, the rear screen projection footage, and while we were doing it, you know, I was reading the drafts as they were coming in, and it was getting better and better. And we had that horrible day where we had Stephen and I had to sit Alan Horn down and tell him we wanted to shoot it in black and white. That's a fun day, as you can imagine. They were thrilled. But I mean, the point was, it was a great screenplay and a great project, and I always love any chance I get to work with Stephen, I take, you know. So it was, for me, it was just a project I really thought would be a fun one to do.
Was this after Good Night and Good Luck had opened and become a success?
No. They were about...
When you said you wanted to do it in black and white?
That was probably about the same time. I don't remember what the order was, but I think that we had just begun... we just gotten the money, the funding for Good Night and Good Luck when we had that meeting with Warner Brothers. So it was pretty much the same time.
Is this pretty what you call a fun project?
It is actually a fun project. It's fun to work on these things. You know, we don't do them thinking they're going to be giant box office hits. You know, we do them because we think they might be, we might be able to spend this time we have pushing to get films we think are interesting made, as opposed to, we want to aim a little higher than the low bar, you know.
Did you see it as a message movie of any kind?
We didn't make it as a message movie. I remember when we were shooting it, the thought was, it depends on where we are sort of politically at the time, whether it'll be about a film about how to screw up an occupation or not. We didn't really think of that, because I think it's not really about that. I think it's more about, the interesting thing would be about how, you know, we were pardoning war criminals, and I don't think we did much of that in this last one. So I think it was, they're not very similar to having much of a political statement.
So George, what is a good German?
Well, it's all in context of 1945, remember. You're going to just get me in trouble. There was a phrase that was used during the occupation, right after the war, that you remember it in Judgment in Nuremberg, too, which was, everyone was trying to convince people that they didn't know what was going on, and that they were sort of... And so the phrase was that they would always come up and say that they were a good German, you know.
Seeing you in a 1940s context in black and white, I was trying to think of who you reminded me of. And then there was a picture in the Sexiest Man thing. I was thinking, you kind of are starting to get like
Kate Hepburn.
No, it's sort of a Clark Gable thing. Have they talked about that with you before? Haven't they?
Well, they did on Oh Brother, because I was doing a sort of a Clark Gable and bad Clark Gable impersonation through that one. You know, I think that just happens if you're doing period pieces in general. People kind of see you in that context. You know, I think Clark Gable just literally just now turned over in his grave.
But what about,
Kate Hepburn.
Were you trying to channel, were you inspired by
past? I know those films backwards and forwards, all of them. I know... especially the films from the 40s and early 50s.
Yeah.
Stephen gave us a couple of films to look at just in order to get that sort of rhythm. Mm-hmm. So we talked to about, like, I watched films like Humoresque, because I think, you know, and John Garfield, I think, is a really interesting character that people don't really talk about much when they talk about that era. Watched Out of the Past with Mitchum, watched a lot of films like that just to get sort of a sense of that kind of a guy. But I really know those characters really well. I've watched those films my whole life.
But you're sort of, those guys kind of got better looking as they got older, and that's sort of happening with you too. I mean,
oh,
you are at 45 and you're still
sexy. I'm not 45,
sexy.
I'm 23. Are you crazy?
But, you know,
the Casablanca homage fun to do?
It was really fun. Well, you know, listen, it's never fun to be shooting Night in the Rain, but it's always fun to do that, you know, the plane and Kate and, you know, the whole thing was really, those are those kind of nights that you drive home with the sun coming up and you think, well, you don't get to do that very often in your life. So that was really fun.
George, there's There are a batch of new German films that are coming out now about World War II.
Right.
Sophie Scholl and...
Flags of Our Fathers.
Yeah, exactly. And they sort of are resetting history a bit, or resetting the impression of public perception about that history. Do you think that this film is related in any way to those, or did you have that in mind in any way, or is there... Yeah.
I don't know. You know, it's an interesting question because I think, you know, there have always been those films that redid that. You know, Best Years of Our Lives certainly re-explained the idea of people coming home, and you know, the Brando and
Young Lions
film certainly changed the perception a little bit. I think that films have done that over the years, have sort of refocused a different angle on looking at how we deal with war. I don't think we came at this film as a let's do a war film. Or let's revisit World War II. I think we thought of it as sort of a love story, murder thriller, like a Chinatown set inside a real world that we thought was sort of fascinating. We had this great documentary that you see all of the German scientists basically trying to surrender to the Americans and not the Russians, because it was a much nicer two-car garage that you got put into. And it's a really fascinating sort of subject matter, and watching von Braun, you know, getting a Medal of Honor is always sort of fascinating. But all of that sort of surrounding it, but still trying to do an old-fashioned movie story inside that world. I don't think that, you know, you could ask Steven about that or Paul, but I don't think there was any real interest in trying to make it to retell World War II history.
George, what does winning the Oscar mean to you after all the years of struggling?
All the years of struggling. Well, it didn't suck right off the bat.
Good.
It was good fun. You know, it doesn't. I think people. There's an interesting thing that happens, you know. It happens whenever something big happens. You get a big part or whatever, where there's this great sort of celebration and you're really sort of excited. And then, you know, you called all your friends and all your friends have called you. And that takes about a day.
Right.
And then suddenly it's just kind of like, you know, there's not, you know, it doesn't make any difference. I can't carry it with me into the meetings at the studio.
You could, but
it really, they don't really care at all, you know. You know, it's still just as difficult to get a $7 million film or a $70 million film. It literally makes no difference at all. The studio's happy because they're my friends. They're happy for you, but they couldn't give a damn. It doesn't make, you know, much of a difference. But, It was a hell of a night. It was really fun, and you know, I really enjoyed it. So
do you think you'll have to gain 40 pounds before you get another Oscar now?
I'm gonna try losing 40 next time. You know, it's a much easier move for me. Boy, I'll tell you. No more putting weight on for a job. That's a brutal thing.
Is your back okay?
It's okay. I still wear a brace, but, you know, I'm wearing a brace now, but it's okay. Doing better.
George, it's such a serious movie. How did you kind of lighten the mood on the set?
Well, if you've ever been on one of Steven's sets, you know, we've never had a time that it wasn't fun and easy. I mean, really, he's so much, you know, it's a crew that I've worked with on 7 films, you know, that I love, and we have a great time. Everybody gives you a really hard time, and so there wasn't really this sort of dark, imposing thing. You know, even when we did ER, which was for the most part a fairly serious show, you know, most actors in general, you can find ways to keep it pretty light along the way, and so we laughed a lot.
Did you ever, like, planning jokes or
I'm trying to think, you know, I was really swamped then. I didn't have a lot of time. I was doing all of, you know, Good Night and Good Luck was coming out, Siriana was coming out. I was doing all of the press for that while I was shooting that. So I was, you know, up to my neck in work at that point. So I didn't get a whole lot of chance to screw around. I was 7 days a week there for
George, you're known for having this great sense of justice and sort of an ethical approach to a lot of the projects you choose and to the things that you're trying to do in the world and all that.
That's a scary thought.
But it's true. But I was wondering, you know, this whole thing about, you know, you declare publicly again in the magazine, you don't want to get married, don't want to have kids. Do the women...
How did you get from that to that?
I'm
going to watch.
Do the women that you date...
That is a good one. I like it.
Do the women that you date, you know, don't they eventually... I mean, you know, most people... Do you feel like it's fair to them that you're in these open-ended things
okay,
that are never
so
going to...
Okay, so now you've gone from the idea that I want to, like, bring up Darfur to do I piss off some girl...
Are you ethical in your relationship?
Yes, I'm ethical in my relationship.
Do they feel like you are?
I don't know. You'll have to ask them.
Who are they at the moment?
Exactly. Well, that's, I'm not going to tell you.
What was it like working with Kate Blanchett? Get on a safer side.
She's, you know, I mean, you guys all know it because you've seen her, and I've said it before. She's just phenomenal. You know, the thing that's great about her is that she, it's when you say consummate professional, you know, people will say that a lot, and that gets thrown around a lot. But a professional in that sense that she doesn't make, you know, she's doing a German accent, and it's a very heavy piece, and you don't have to sit there and live this sort of miserable life with her. She doesn't speak German all day long and, you know, wear you down. She'll sit around, she'll talk about her kids will come by, you'll have sort of a great, you know, she's a true, like Spencer Tracy was, you know, where she, you could have a normal conversation, you'd have a really fun afternoon, and then they go, and Stephen will go, in action, and all of a sudden she's like, I want to be alone. You know, and this thing comes out of her that you just go, whoa. And so it makes you, you know, it keeps you on your toes with her. But I just couldn't say, I can't say enough good about her. You know?
How's Ocean's 13 going?
Good. Stephen's editing it as we speak.
Yeah.
Well, actually, right now he's talking about this film, but he's editing it right now.
Was it good to get back together?
Yeah, those guys, I love them. I love them. They're just, they're sweet and funny, and they're all sort of doing things that you know, they're all having great years. Brad with Babel and Matt with The Departed.
Yeah, but Matt with that picture you have in the magazine, how could you do that to him, a snakeskin suit? Do you feel bad?
Well, how do you put on a snakeskin suit? That's right. When was that ever a good idea?
Does Julia have a small part in that, in Ocean's 13?
No.
So who are the women in that?
Ellen Barkin. Let's see. She's. I'm trying to think if there's anybody else.
Is she your love interest in the movie?
No.
Who's her?
Or she just runs the. She and Al Pacino work together, and she and Matt have a very funny sequence together.
George, you know, Kate Blanchett worked with Brad and Babel, and you and the good German.
Right.
You both have love scenes with her. Is there sort of a competition for Kate Blanchett's affections?
There is. We're both fighting over Kate's affections. Her husband will kill us. But I hadn't thought about that. That's true, you come to think of it.
And do you think Oceans is going to go to Oceans 20, like a Rocky series?
I think I think we'll stop after this one because we have a good reason for making this one. But, you know, but there's no telling if, you know, 10, 15 years down the road when, you know, we need to do one, we might just come back.
What was the reason to do 13?
First of all, we felt like 12 didn't quite catch it, and we felt like it was two-thirds of a good film, and it sort of fell short in a couple of places. And we wanted another crack at it, and you know, we came up with a really good idea, which is revenge, which is always good. And it's not about making money, so we thought this could be a really fun film
like
to make.
To add Al Pacino to the mix, though.
What? Man, oh man, Al Pacino. What a blast. You know, there's a guy that just truly loves acting.
Yeah.
You know how, I think most actors get to a certain age, and they just... They really just want to, like, they collect a paycheck, or they don't give a damn, or whatever. He just loves it. I mean, he's into it, and he's exciting to be on a set with.
What's your favorite Al Pacino story from the movie?
I don't have any Al Pacinos. I mean, I can't think of any right now. It's too... Grant's producing the film that I'm directing, Leatherheads, that I'm in pre-production on right now, about football in 1925 with Renee Zellweger, and I are doing it, and it's going to be fun. I'm really excited about that. This kid John Krasinski from The Office is also one who I love. Jonathan Pryce.
Are you working on specific projects that you have in mind? Mm-hmm. Is there anything in life that you want very much to do that you haven't yet done yet?
Sure, there are a lot of things I haven't yet done. I find that in my life I'm trying to focus on sort of specific things so that it doesn't get too diffuse. I still have a lot of work to do on Darfur. I've got a couple of places I'm going to go before the end of the year to talked to a couple of heads of state. We're, you know, there's a lot of work there to be done, and it's a long, long haul, and a lot of people are going to get killed before that gets done. So I feel like that's a that's an ongoing thing for me, and I want to keep that in the foreground of the things that I'm doing besides the film industry. So that's the, you know, that's I think it's important to really keep it focused on one that you can actually try and bring focus, because the more you do, I think the more, the less helpful it can be.
You made a great...
Did you ever find a movie this year that's really knocked you out?
I love Little Miss Sunshine. I thought that was fantastic.
What did you like about that?
I just thought it was hysterically funny. I was really surprised by it. You know, it came out and it was going to be this little film, and I just thought, you know, you watch Alan Arkin, everybody in it, I thought everybody in it was great. And
you wrote a letter to Alan Arkin congratulating him?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay.
Did somebody say that I had?
No, I just wondered if that's what you were
no,
saying.
No, no, no.
George, did Yanking Good German give you any new perspectives on the Iraq occupation? Like, looking at what they did back then and compared to what they're doing now?
No, I mean, I knew about the Potsdam Conference. I knew basically most of the occupation, with the exception of I learned a little bit more about the German scientists in the V2 program and the Camp Dora issues, which I knew a lot about already. You know, I know what we all know, what we can read, and you know.
But did it make you more or less sympathetic to the current situation that the Americans are in Iraq?
Neither more nor less. I had my own opinions on that, and nothing. I mean, certainly nothing I did in the Good German would change what I was thinking about the occupation and you know in Iraq. That is informed by what I read in the papers and what I see in the you know newscasts.
You said something great about Darfur. You said that as a celebrity, you don't change people's minds, but you bring the cameras.
Mm-hmm. Well, you don't make policies. You know, I think that that's a mistake that happens sometimes when people are, you know, when you're famous and people are willing to hear you, you sort of start thinking that what you're saying can change things. And what you realize is it's not what your job isn't to change things. Your job is to try and not create policy, but to shine a light on good or bad policy and try to help the policymakers make changes. I think that that's the secret. And I think the other secret is to be incredibly well informed on the subject so that you can't do damage when someone who has intent on, you know, making your contribution less than what it is, you have to make sure that you know more than they do about the subject. That's, I think, the important
part. And it makes you, does it make you less effective if you're too, harsh in your, I mean, you have to take
well, I think that's the policies in general in America. I don't think that, I don't think you can corner people because you don't give them an out. I think that's something we've known our whole lives, and we make those mistakes every once in a while. But, you know, the minute you start cornering people and saying that they're absolute evil, then you're not really going to find a diplomatic way out. And I think that that's a problem that we have in Darfur, in a sense, which is, as evil as these acts are, we have to find ways diplomatically, because we're not going to bomb our way into the Sudan.
George, when you did Good Night and Good Luck, it was obvious why that was in black and white, because you had the McCarthy footage you wanted to integrate into the movie.
Right.
Why did you have to say this one's got to be black and white?
Well, when you read it and you see the script, the style of the writing, everything about it informed how you shot the film. You know, if it was done more contemporary in a way, then you could shoot it in color and shoot it as an epic, you know, and it would have been a very different film. But, you know, when you read the script, you realize that everything else you do in the film, you need to help the dialogue in a way, which is you've got to help the costumes, and you have to help the sound has to help you, the way it's shot has to help you, the color has to help sort of set that place in time, because you know you got to set that place in time, and I think that that's the trick with you doing it in black and white.
We're adding 90 guys.
What are the holidays like at your house before the
lights went out?
Yeah. What are the holidays like at your house?
They're good. They're fun.
Are you the cooking type?
I am the cooking type. I do the cooking. I like that. You know, if you actually dimmed them in like a bar and up and down a couple of times.
What is Jonathan Motors on? Is this a?
Oh, you know,
what is it?
Jerry Weintraub gave me the shirt, and I needed a T-shirt because I was wearing a back brace, so I figured I'd put that on over the top.
And back brace? Are you okay?
A 7-day a week thing that you have to.
No, just sometimes when I,
you
know.
Here.
Yeah, I won't forget my cousin.
Like when you beaten up by Toby
strain
McGuire.
It or? Yeah, well, I was, yeah, when I get beaten up by Toby McGuire.
The tale of the tape says you should have won that. But.
You know what? I figured I should have won too. He's, you know,
he's
but
Spider-Man.
He is Spider-Man.
He's Spider-Man.
Spider-Man, I think, kicks an old Batman's ass. That's